secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds with Red Right Hand, a song given worldwide reach by being the theme tune of the TV series Peaky Blinders. But Red Right Hand is a song that reaches way back into the childhood of the singer, songwriter, artist and icon Nick Cave. It goes back to his formative years in Wangaratta in Victoria, Australia. Cave's childhood and adolescence as a springboard to his musical genius is the subject matter of Boy on Fire, The Young Nick Cave by Mark Merdu. And I'm delighted that Mark has joined us now from Australia. Mark, you're very welcome to ARENA.
Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you. One of the most extraordinary aspects of Boy on Fire is how heavily involved Nick Cave and his family and close friends were in the process. Did he take much convincing?
Well, I guess the answer to that question is yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a very sort of fitful beginning. And it wasn't until Nick and I actually met that there was a sense of deeper commitment to the project. And then the actual journey itself was a bit of a long and twisted path all its own. It was sort of 10 years from beginning till now, maybe even slightly more. And along the way, I sort of abandoned the idea of doing a complete life project, at least in one book, and focused on, you know, kind of your classic portrait of the artist as a young man, because I could see in that sort of nuclear early experience a hell of a lot of things about Nick and his art, and he himself references it all the time, and you can even hear it right up till now in Carnage, actually.
Yes, because you said you were just overawed and overpowered, really, by the breadth of the task you had undertaken, and just after, you know, just being unable to take on the whole project, you just decided, like a whale or something, to eat it bit by bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was turning into my Moby Dick project and I was Captain Ahab, so, you know, it was as much nightmare as dream project. And, I mean, the difficulty with Nick is not just the breadth of his career, but wherever you look into his music, you can go deeper and deeper and get lost in all these rabbit holes. And, you know, one song references another. He's, you know, his work across everything from poetry to music to film scripts to theatre to novels, and there are constant conversations and webs sort of occurring everywhere. And with something like Red Right Hand, which you just played before, I mean, I very quickly realised when I was in his hometown of Wangaratta that on the one hand, it's this sort of mythical storytelling, sort of shadow-like encounter with a very ominous figure that owes a lot to William Faulkner and barn burning and those kind of sort of American sort of Southern Gothic stories. But at the same time too, when I was in Wangaratta, I looked around and thought, oh my God, you could use Red Right Hand almost as well as you might use Google Maps to walk across town.
Yes, yes. You've spoken too of it, that you more or less, I mean, you had a very long conversation with him where he was happy for you to proceed with the project. But after that, there was a kind of agree to disagree standoff between the two of you.
Well, I mean, as everybody knows, Nick lost his son under very tragic circumstances when Arthur died a few years ago now. And that made Nick feel that much had changed in his life, which, of course, it had. And from his perspective, it rendered everything sort of obsolete and no longer relevant, and he felt he was a different person. I didn't entirely agree with that, and I'd invested 7-8 years of the project. The other thing is, Nick, I think, being realistic about my own problems, I was taking so long to get anything done. I don't think Nick really thought I was ever going to get to the end. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he just had a change of heart at that time. But we've communicated since the book came out, and he's really pleased with the outcome of it, and we're kind of back in a kind of neutral holding zone. So, you know, it's kind of things are much friendlier again. I don't know if any of us really, if you're honest, and I'm including myself in this, could stand a biography about ourselves on any level, if the truth is had.
Of course, of course. And Colin Cave, his father, he comes across as quite a domineering individual, a very artistic man, a man, a very well-read man, but his influence in the household was a very domineering one.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very powerful figure, and if Nick hadn't have become the global superstar that he is in many respects, a lot of people would refer to Nick as Colin Cave's son. You know, he had a major hand in the state of Victoria in sort of pioneering a whole lot of developments in adult education. He was a well-known sort of community sort of theatre director. He was a kind of legendary sort of life-changing teacher. And he also had a lot to do with defining the mythology of Ned Kelly, the sort of famous Australian Irish outlaw, I have to say. So,
yes, that's
and
okay.
The figure of Ned Kelly, yeah, I just thought I'd give that a little plug.
Yes.
But the figure of Ned Kelly, it sort of looms large in Nick's background, and in a way is an icon behind Red Right Hand as well. And it's a kind of, you know, a shadow figure for Nick's own father too, because Nick's father was obsessed with that heritage and history and wrote a defining essay about it. And that influenced Peter Carey's book, The True History of the Kelly Gang. So there are all these, again, these webs that keep kind of pulling together that you're surprised to find and discover.
He was obviously, through his father, an avid reader, and then he was interested in art as well. But was it Caulfield Grammar School then where he would have met the bones of the band that became The Boy Next Door?
Yeah, it was at high school at Caulfield in Melbourne. He'd gone down to Melbourne from Wangaratta as a boarder. He'd actually left Wangaratta in shame, really. It was on the verge of being expelled, and his mother and father, Colin and Dawn, didn't know what to do with him. He was just a very wild, brilliant country boy. And it was in Melbourne, fortunately for him, at school that he met Mick Harvey, who'd become one of his truly great collaborators, the guitarist Roland S. Howard, bassist Tracy Pugh and Phil Calvert, and they formed The Boys Next Door, and that was the absolute nucleus for what became The Birthday Party, and they were the collaborators that launched Nick on the world stage.
Well, will we listen to a track from them? This is Shivers. That's The Boys Next Door and Shivers, and I'm talking to Mark Murdoo, the author of The Young Nick Cave, Boy on Fire. So that is the band that then segued into The Birthday Party.
It is indeed. Although they were much more romantic sounding and probably nearer power pop to some extent at that stage of things.
Yes, yes. And you were talking there about Nick as a young boy getting into lots of trouble. And then he went to art college. He was doing so well in art college. He was so good at art. And then he failed his second year and then kind of went back into that kind of delinquent behaviour again. What was that about him?
Well, I think there's a number of factors there. There's probably always a bit of the delinquent about Nick at heart. I think, too, you know, he just was constantly clashing with his father. There was a sort of power struggle, and it's probably a pretty archetypal thing between young men and their fathers that should occur. And he was not being well received at art school, despite his abilities and his obvious intelligence, and there's a lot of frustration, and that sort of slowly started to pour itself into music and performance.
You have talked to Nick on many occasions for long periods of time. Is there a difference between the public Nick Cave and that Nick Cave that you got to know and talk to?
I would say Nick in private is a lot funnier. I think he's perhaps gentler. I think those qualities are coming through in the Red Hand Files a lot more in the last few years. You're starting to see, I guess, the real Nick, or the Nick as he is now, rather than how he might have seemed in the past.
Yes. And you build up the story then. And of course, when you decided that you were going to write about the young Nick Cave, you have to decide where you're going to end before you consider maybe going back to the subject matter for other books. How did you decide that it was when they decided to leave Australia and go to Britain was a good place to finish the book?
Well, I felt that was kind of the launching off moment. I think it cleanly carved off the pure sense of him being formed in Australia. I think all his dreams and most of his abilities, both as an artist and a performer, were all intact inside him and ready to burst forth. I did have a vague sense, because he's a big lover of Milton and Paradise Lost, there was almost that demonic edge of in Paradise Lost of Satan travelling across the water to wreak havoc on Eden. And I think Nick was hell-bent on making an impact on England. And I did think that a volume two with about London and Berlin would make another nice section.
And are you going to do that?
Yeah, I am. I've been sort of debating it, because the book took so much out of me, but
yes.
I'm keen to go another step forward.
Well, looking forward to that. And I guess it was Ned Kelly's revenge sent him over to England. So Boy on Fire, The Young Nick Cave by Mark Murdo, is published by Atlantic Books, and we're going to finish now with Sad Waters.
Seduced my soul.